RadioInfluence.com.
Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. We are Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. And today we got a really big show as we continue our war on sugar. The Crush War on Sugar continues tonight as we dedicate one show each month to the war on sugar. And this has been spurred on by a number of events. For those of you who have listened in the past, my mom's Alzheimer's has really got me looking at the long-term effects of diet very differently, and we're looking for solutions there. And there's no doubt about it in the research and the conversations we've had over the last few months that our diets are directly related to brain health, and that's really important. We're coming off our last War on Sugar show with Sanjiv Chopra, Chief Medical Officer or Medical Director for Harvard School of Medicine, and it was based on his conversation of what is the healthiest beverage you can drink. And if you heard the Crush report that's been running on TSN 1260 or on the website, you'll know that the answer to that question is coffee, black coffee with 2% milk. And Dr. Chopra is recommending 4 cups of coffee or to tolerance per day. And the health benefits are incredible. And that's the kind of thing we're covering as we, you know, wage this war on sugar. So let's set the stage. We're, again, dedicating one show each month, and this is the kickoff for the fall here. In 1882, the average North American adult ate the amount of sugar found in one of today's 12-ounce sodas every 5 days. So back in 1882, if we took all the sugar out of one can of today's soda, it would take us 5 days to eat that much sugar. Today, we consume that much every 7 hours. In 1882, the average person per year consumed 6.3 pounds of sugar, sweeteners, that kind of thing. Today, we're pushing, depending on which study you look at, between 110 and 150 pounds of sugar per year. It's off the charts and it's everywhere. Sugars are hidden in almost everything we eat. And I think that's part of the battle here, just being aware. Table sugars. We have fructose in some of our foods. Sucrose, high fructose corn syrup, maltodextrins, the artificial sweeteners, they all play a role. And if you think, for example, like your average daily diet is relatively good and healthy, I did a little test recently that sort of gave me a shocking glimpse of, you know, what my diet is doing to me and where I'm at in terms of the overall health scale. I failed miserably. We'll talk about it later in the show, but it was a real eye opener because I am actually very conscious about my diet. I'm not crazy about it. Don't get me wrong. And I don't think you have to be crazy about it, but you got to have awareness. So what we do with all of our athletes that come into our programs and, you know, some of the people that we just help out, we do a daily food log. And this would be really cool. If you could sit down tonight and just write down all the food that you've had today, coffees, drinks, snacks, your meals, and then just go online. And there's great resources online, or even email them to us at Crush Performance. I'll break it down and let you know how much sugar you've consumed over the course of the day. And it can get carried away really quick. If you had a orange juice, freshly squeezed orange juice at breakfast, Connor, you're a pretty healthy eater. Do you drink orange juice, for example?
I'm more of an apple juice guy myself.
Oh, apple juice is as bad, by the way, except some of the acids they're saying in apple juice can be devastating to your teeth. So again, we'll have to look into that a little bit more.
Good to hear.
Yeah, we're focusing on the sugars. Well, you know what? Take a glass of fresh squeezed orange juice. You take a 12-ounce glass, and you break that down and try to look at, you know, how good it is for you. Yeah, there's some nutrients in there. We know that. And this is where we need to start being careful with our juices. But a 12-ounce glass of orange juice has 36 grams of sugar. That's 9 tablespoons. Think about this. 9 tablespoons of sugar. Most people don't stop at one glass of orange juice. They have 2 glasses of orange juice. 72 grams of sugar. That's 18 teaspoons. 1 12-ounce glass of orange juice has the same amount of sugar as a can of Coke. So, you know, before you even have gotten to your toast in the morning, you've already exceeded the daily consumption of carbohydrates and sugars for an adult. And that's what I'm talking about. It can get away on you really, really quick. And, doing the daily food logs is a really good idea. So what do you do? I mean, everybody talks about the problems. Everybody talks about the issues. And everybody tries to provide advice. And I think the best thing is just being aware. And that's what the war on sugar is all about. So what do you do? Do you diet? Well, we know that diets don't work. 90% of all diets fail. And they fail because they're not realistic. They leave you hungry or they cut out the foods that you love. And it doesn't matter what diet you're on. You can make them work. If you go back to a great conversation we had about a year ago with Dr. Yanni Friedhoff, the author of The Diet Fix, Why Diets Fail and How to Fix Yours. It's a great conversation, but it's also a big eye opener. Diets don't work for a lot of good reasons. You need to come up with a process, I think. And that's going to be the key to everything. If we look at it, for example, Connor, if I were to ask you, what do you think's more influential on, monitoring, getting your weight under control? Would it be, controlling the foods you eat over the course of the day, or would it be making sure you get your exercise? What would you say has the bigger influence on controlling your weight?
I think it's got to be diet.
It is diet. 80% of your modifiable weight comes from diet. Exercise is a small percentage, but we don't underestimate exercise. It's got to be part of the process. So I think we need to start with what you know, and that's what today's show is all about. We are joined by Dr. David Perlmutter, board-certified neurologist, fellow of the American College of Nutrition. He's the author of a couple of great books, bestsellers. The first one was The Better Brain Book. Then The Brain Maker came along. And today's focus is a book called The Grain Brain. Grain Brain, the surprising truth about wheat, carbs, and sugar, your brain's silent killers. The website is drperlmutter.com. You can follow him on Twitter at David Perlmutter. And Dr. Perlmutter, welcome to the show today.
Jeff, I'm delighted to be with you today.
Well, I'm telling you, I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. I read the book, The Grain Brain, fantastic read from cover to cover. I could not put it down. It's one of those books that is just jam-packed with information. I've actually read it 3 times, and it is definitely on our Crush must-read list, not just for our athletes, Dr. Perlmutter, but for everybody who's listening to the show. So I want to thank you for that great book right now, right off the start.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the compliment.
The opening of the book starts kind of like this. The fate of your brain is not in your genes. It's in the food you eat. And there's also another powerful statement right as the book begins. Modern grains are silently destroying your brain. And I guess this is sort of a preface to the conversation we're going to have today. Dr. Perlmutter, what we eat is really, really powerful when it comes to our overall health. And I think, after reading all the research and getting into your book, it might even go deeper than we first thought.
Who knew? I mean, this is brand new information that was only just made available to us 2,000 years ago. So, yeah, it's hot off the press that, believe it or not, our food choices matter in terms of how we feel, in terms of how our immune systems work, in terms of how the brain works. I mean, your work has really focused a lot on human performance, both in sports, but also brain health and wellness, et cetera, based upon activities, based upon lifestyle choices. But, the real important untold message here, untold story, is that our lifestyle choices, including our food choices, play a major role in determining the brain's destiny in terms of its function day to day and in terms of its risk for degeneration, like Alzheimer's disease. So just to be so clear, what I'm saying is food helps to determine your risk for a disease for which there is no treatment. That is called Alzheimer's.
We're talking with Dr. David Perlmutter, board-certified neurologist, author of the fantastic book, The Grain Brain. You can check out his information at drperlmutter.com. Well, Dr. Perlmutter, let's jump forward, or back, I should say. As we mentioned, the information from 2,000 years ago. Let's go to the year 1992, when the U.S. government, and I'm generalizing here, the government, but there was a real push to sort of influence the health of the population, and the recommendations were, let's eat more carbohydrates and let's cut down the fats. This was an absolute massive turning point if we look at what's happened since that point in time.
And that's right. First of all, you know, not to be too cynical about it, but I usually say let's light the single candle but not curse the darkness. I need to perhaps curse the darkness just a little bit. Why that happened, that information came to us courtesy of what is called the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, that to this day continues to set dietary recommendations for Americans. In other words, the people who create the food are telling us what to eat. Our dietary recommendations are influenced by the USDA recommended, right?
Right.
And right off the bat, that's the fox guarding the hen house. The people who are in charge of helping farmers make a lot of money and become successful shouldn't be in charge of telling us which of their products we eat. And you're exactly right. In the early 90s, we were suddenly told that fat was the enemy, that if we cut our fat, eat low-fat or no-fat cookies and Oreos, everything was going to be just dandy. And as soon as that information made its way to the public and people really made their shift away from dreaded fat and needing calories, then they turned to carbs for calories. They turned to grains and whole grain goodness. And we suddenly shifted the American diet away from one based on fat and protein, which is how we've eaten for 2.5 million years, to a diet that suddenly was just bombarded with carbohydrates. It's going on to this day. And when we did that, dramatically, we increased the rates of diabetes, as you might expect. Suddenly, if you're eating sugar, of course you're going to become diabetic. So if you look at the curve of the incidence of diabetes in America, right like you just said, in the early 90s, it suddenly hits an, what we call an inflection point and skyrockets. Why? Because we stopped eating fat and we filled in the empty spot with carbohydrates. And again, humans have never eaten carbs in our history. It's only been in the past couple of hundred years that we've had the ability to process grain to make it more refined, the ability to make sugar. We've never had sugar. The only sugar that we would ever have, was in the form of ripened fruit. That only happened at one time of the year. And when it happened in the late summer and in the early fall, when fruit would ripen, it would send a signal to our bodies that winter was coming. And that sugar would make our bodies produce insulin, which makes our bodies store fat. That's a great mechanism. It's allowed us to survive. It's why we eat those blueberries in the fall, because we have to put on body fat because we're going to be unable to track down animals in the winter, but we want to be able to use our body fat to survive. The problem with that is now people are pounding the carbohydrates 365 days a year for the winter that never comes. So we're storing body fat day in and day out, and winter never comes. You never get a chance to burn that fat. So it was a huge event in more ways than one that happened in the early 90s that we were given the wrong information. You know, suddenly fat was our enemy, but yet humans have sought out fat for a couple of million years. I mean, if we found a pile of bones on the ground, we'd break it open and eat the marrow because it was full of fat. So fat sustains us. Now, to be clear, we've got to be very careful when we talk this way that we're talking about good fat.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, I'm recommending people increase their fat consumption, but not the highly modified grocery store hydrogenated fats and oils that are so common in our society. There are bad fats and good fats. I'm talking about, you know, the coconut oil, the extra virgin olive oil, the grass-fed beef, wild fish, nuts, seeds. These are sources of wonderful, healthy fat. You know, it used to be a couple of decades ago, you couldn't say healthful and fat in the same sentence because that would be an oxymoron. Turns out that now we have to challenge the grains. And are the grains really as healthful as we were told? We were all told whole grain goodness, you know, and pictures of whole grain bread, and that's going to help lower your cholesterol and you're going to live to forever and win the lottery if you eat whole grain this and that. Turns out that's a very, very bad choice. This whole grain bread, aside from the gluten that we'll cover in a few minutes, but just because of the fact that it dramatically raises your blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to reframe. And if for no other reason, if you don't even want to pay attention to current nutritional science, ask yourself, what have humans been eating for the past 2 million years that allowed us to survive to this day? And it wasn't carbs. It was fat.
Interesting stuff. We're talking with Dr. David Perlmutter, author of The Grain Brain, also The Brain Maker. You could check out his great work at drperlmutter.com. Well, in your book, you have another statement that I thought was very interesting. It was referring to grains. And there's a stat there saying that the average adult is now consuming about 133 pounds of wheat annually. Statement was this: grains, a terrorist group that bullies our most precious organ, the brain. You know, Dr. Perlmutter, we've been so focused on our waistlines and our weight, and rightfully so, because we know there are consequences when our weight gets out of control. But protecting the brain is a real, real interesting, I think, angle on this. And I think it's something that a lot of people don't particularly think about, especially when we're talking about the food we eat. I think a lot of people have just sort of, you know, looked at, you know, conditions like Alzheimer's and dementia as sort of a genetic fate. And you are not a believer in that.
Well, it's not that I'm a believer in it or not. I mean, it's the fact that that's what the science is telling us now, that we can absolutely change the odds. And there was a wonderful report written by an NYU a PhD recently, Dr. Melissa Schilling, and I interviewed her. And in fact, she demonstrated that there could be a 50% reduction in the prevalence of Alzheimer's disease if people had better control over their blood sugar. In other words, the foods that they consume.
Mm-hmm.
So that said, another study by Dr. Deborah Barnes, published in the journal The Lancet, demonstrated, again, a 53% reduced risk for Alzheimer's if people paid attention to various lifestyle factors. So the notion that this is just luck of the draw is very silly, especially in the context of the fact that there is no treatment. We know that our lifestyle choices play, as you mentioned, a dramatic role in determining our waistline. And, you know, people can understand that. Well, the more of this crappy food that I eat, likely I'm going to gain weight. But if you understand that there is a direct correlation between the size of your belly and your risk for Alzheimer's, then that's pretty easy to connect. That's why you need to pay attention to your food. The bigger you, the more visceral fat, the bigger your belly, the greater is your risk for Alzheimer's. The bigger your belly, the smaller is your brain's memory center.
Dr. Perlmutter, we got to cut out for a quick break here. Hey, when we come back, we'll continue this conversation as the crush war on sugar continues. We'll talk artificial sweeteners, gluten, sleep, and what might be the second largest food and nutrition scam ever, cholesterol. Stick around. More right after this.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass. We are your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Hey, if you want to get to us, there's a bunch of ways to do it. On the website, it's crushperformance.com. On Twitter, at Jeff Crush. We're slowly trying to build our Twitter following there. And if you're on Facebook, we've started a group called The Talent Grid. We've got a great collection of people there, athletes, coaches, scientists, and just people trying to tap into the world of top performance. So apply to that if you're on Facebook. It's been a ton of fun so far. And today, the Crush War on Sugar continues as we really try to set the tone and inform everybody on what's going on behind the scenes. We're having a fantastic conversation today. So let's get back to it. We're talking with Dr. David Perlmutter as he joins us on the Crush War on Sugar episode here today. You know, prior to reading your book, my thoughts were that diabetes could single-handedly bring down every healthcare system on the planet, just looking at the rise in parallel with obesity. But now we're looking at Alzheimer's in a new light, and it's been referred to as type 3 diabetes, diabetes of the brain. And Alzheimer's, it seems, might be the culprit that takes down our healthcare systems, especially when we look at what might happen by the year 2050, the crippling effect it might have on our healthcare system. And to think that we have the power in our hands to change that destiny is a very, very interesting and powerful conversation. And I guess that's sort of driving this conversation today.
It certainly is. And again, it's the secret that doesn't want, you know, people don't want you to know. You're right. By 2050, the incidence of Alzheimer's is predicted to, rather the prevalence is predicted to triple. Right now, in America, there are 5.4 million Alzheimer's patients. In Canada, about 500,000. Globally, about 46 million. And this number is going to triple. Well, we can treat diabetes. At least we can give medications to lower the blood sugar. But there is no treatment at all right now for Alzheimer's. Nothing works. So when you think about that in the context of the fact that it is somewhat preventable, that we have to stand from the mountaintop and yell the message out that, hey, as a matter of fact, this disease that is so devastating can likely be prevented. You know, truthfully, a patient of mine who is, you know, well on the way to Alzheimer's, there's very little that's effective that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this is when we're putting our seatbelt on before we leave the house. You know, when we get in the car, you're not going to put the seatbelt on when you're already involved in a car accident. It doesn't do you any good. John Kennedy, in his inaugural address, said that the time to fix the roof is when the sun is shining. And that's what, you know, my life is all about, is letting people know, make these changes now, because, you know, there could very likely be some storm clouds on the horizon, and we've got to do what we can to stay healthy. And look, I have this discussion from a professional perspective, being a neurologist, and from a personal perspective of somebody whose father died of Alzheimer's disease. So I get it loud and clear. And, you know, I'm sending out my PBS DVDs for free, you know, for people to have it when they get our new book, The Grain Brain Whole Life Plan, and even pre-ordering it. We're sending out an hour program, a DVD, for people just to have this information so they can, you know what to do. How do I implement this today?
Great stuff. The book we're looking at right now is called The Grain Brain. You also have The Brain Maker. The new book comes out in November. It's called The Grain Brain, The Whole Life Plan. You could pre-order that, Dr. Perlmutter, I believe, on your website, drperlmutter.com.
That's right. Well, they can order the book anywhere, but if they go to drperlmutter.com and just, you know, copy the receipt and send it to us, we will, in America at least, send everybody a DVD of the PBS program.
Yeah, fantastic, especially when we look at the statistics and the science that's available and the fact that the power is right in our hands. You know, we look at Alzheimer's, and it's a situation that could dwarf the obesity epidemic, which is very, very scary. A couple of turning points. We mentioned the 1992 USDA statement that carbohydrates are the way to go, but also now we're looking at brain health and the impact that this reduction of fats, healthy fats in our diet, has had. The idea of cholesterol and the prescription of statins has also been a game changer in terms of brain health, Dr. Perlmutter.
Well, it's true. I mean, once again, we've been given some information that isn't on target, and that is that cholesterol is our enemy. That we've got to do everything we can to get rid of cholesterol, low cholesterol, this egg white omelet, no yolk because it has cholesterol. Like, remember the days of that where cholesterol was so demonized. Well, guess what? Cholesterol is what your body uses to manufacture vitamin D in the sunlight. Cholesterol is what your body uses to make estrogen and testosterone and cortisol and progesterone. Cholesterol is what is needed for your brain to function, to have antioxidant effects within the brain. It's a fundamental part of cell membranes, including in the brain. So we're now seeing what is called statin brain, where people are taking these statin drugs to lower their cholesterol, and they're becoming confused. As a matter of fact, a NASA, an astronaut, wrote a book about it, that he became totally confused because he was put on a statin drug and couldn't think straight. So we now have to understand that the lower your cholesterol is, the higher is your risk for dementia. And suicide, for that matter. So we've got to really reframe this notion of this war on cholesterol and recognize it is ill-founded, that cholesterol does not plug arteries or sludge the arteries or narrow arteries. That doesn't happen. What happens is there's inflammation in the arteries, and then cholesterol actually comes along and tries to heal that. So we're blaming the firemen here who arrived on scene for the fire, and it's getting a lot of people into trouble.
A lot of people into trouble. And this is one of the incredible things that I think is so frustrating for me, especially when I look at the science and when you have an understanding of chemistry, biochemistry, which the average person doesn't have, Dr. Perlmutter, but to get an understanding that the cholesterol and even the LDL cholesterol, which has typically been framed as the bad cholesterol, is not our enemy. It's one of our saviors when it's operating properly.
That's right. LDL is a carrier protein that delivers fatty acids to the cell where they are then used for metabolism. It's a wonderful mechanism. And you got to give credit to whoever in marketing came up with the idea of calling it bad cholesterol.
Right.
It's not even cholesterol. It's not bad or good anything, cholesterol at all. It's a protein.
Right.
LDL, low density lipoprotein. It's a protein. It's not cholesterol. But it does become an issue when it becomes damaged or oxidized. That's what free radicals do. That's why we take antioxidants. The main thing that damages LDL is when it binds to sugar, becomes what we call glycated, and that leads to it being oxidized or damaged. We glycate our LDL and as a protein. As we glycate or bind to sugar, all of our proteins, when our blood sugar is higher, and we make our blood sugar higher based upon eating more sugar. The more sugar you eat, the higher is your blood sugar, the more likely you are to damage your LDL, and then it does become an issue. Oxidized LDL, which many doctors are now measuring in their labs, is a bad player. But LDL itself is, without LDL, you couldn't survive. You need your LDL to carry important fatty acids to the cell for metabolism.
Absolutely incredible. We're talking with Dr. David Perlmutter, board-certified neurologist, fellow of the American College of Nutrition, author of The Grain Brain and The Brain Maker. His new book comes out in November, The Grain Brain, The Whole Life Plan. Dr. Perlmutter, this is a very, very important conversation today. I think it's shedding light on a lot of issues that people don't really understand. So I want to thank you for that. But when we talk about the LDL situation, the carbohydrate situation, we also, I think, have to mix in the conversation about sugar, because as you mentioned, sugar and our blood sugar levels being elevated so constantly now with our daily diets and the type of marketing our kids and we're exposed to on a daily basis are really, really impacting our health, and it has long-term implications.
That's right. And again, this is a diet that humans have never, ever been exposed to. This is a diet, you know, we did get a little bit of sugar, as I mentioned, in the late fall, rather late summer, early fall, when fruit would ripen. But the notion of bombarding our physiology with sugar on a daily basis is something we're just not geared up for. And, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that sugar is hiding in the most unsuspected places. For example, you know, what's the best beverage that you could start your day with? I mean, I live in Florida, so you go to a restaurant, the first thing you get is, they put on the table, is a, you know, 12-ounce glass of OJ. That's
right.
A perfect beverage. You're not going to start your morning with a Coke. You're going to have a glass of orange juice, right? Well, the truth of the matter is a glass of orange juice contains 36 grams of sugar. That is 9 teaspoons of sugar. It's the same as a can of Coke. So if you have 2 glasses of OJ in the morning, that's already 72 grams of carbohydrates. That's your carbohydrate load for the day. And that's even before your bagel or your croissant or your cereal has even, or your pancakes have even gotten to the plate. You're already over your limit just by virtue of having two glasses of orange juice. It's 18 teaspoons of sugar. Like it or not, the reason we love our orange juice is because it's sweet.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of learning that people have to do in terms of these hidden sources of carbs that we, you know, we're unsuspecting. So people turn to these so-called healthy, natural sweeteners like agave nectar. I mean, what a great name. Agave nectar. Nectar being the drink of the gods. But, you know, the reality is, agave is about the most dangerous sweetener on the planet because it is so high in fructose. It's higher than high fructose corn syrup in right. terms of the amount of fructose that it contains. And fructose, again, binds to protein even more aggressively to increase inflammation and the production of free radicals. So, gosh, even in our local health food store by the where you get your coffee, they have agave, and people are just dumping it into their beverage thinking this is a free ride. It's not. It's about the most dangerous thing you could ever want to consume.
Oh, Dr. Perlmutter, it is a vicious, vicious cycle. We're joined today by Dr. Perlmutter, board-certified neurologist, fellow of the American College of Nutrition, author of the great book, The Grain Brain and Brain Maker. Our war on sugar. We dedicated one show each month to the war on sugar, and this is exactly why people don't know. And you're so right. It is hidden everywhere. And now the marketing ploys of the big food companies are attacking children on a daily basis. It just seems such an uphill battle, but there are solutions. One other thing I want to get to before we start talking about solutions is the gluten conversation, because the Grain Brain, it's a fantastic read for everybody who's listening today. It's a crush must read. The surprising truth about wheat, carbs, and sugar, your brain's silent killers. You have a very, very strong emphasis on the idea of gluten. I took the test in the book. You know which one I'm referring to?
And people, I do, right at the beginning.
Yeah, and people get it. I failed. I thought I would kick butt on this test, but I failed with 11 truths. And I'm looking at this going, holy cow, and I'm fairly conscious. So I get a little scared for the population at large when, you know, I'm fairly conscious and somewhat knowledgeable, I thought anyway. But wow, we have an uphill battle here.
It's true. And, you know, there's such a... There's such a dichotomy now between what is science and what is considered fad, and you know, people think, well, I'm gluten free, and it's because it's cool. Well, the reality is that the reason you should be gluten free is because there is a robust level of science that's demonstrating that gluten has some damaging effects upon the gut, and therefore increases inflammation, the cornerstone of every bad disease you don't want to get. And this is stuff that comes out of Harvard. So, you know, the notion that, well, being gluten free is kind of trendy, kind of exciting, on and on, really. That's not what's going on here. We're talking hardcore science. So, you know, gluten affects the leakiness of the gut and therefore increases inflammation in all people, not just those who are gluten sensitive and not just those, the 1% of our population that has celiac disease. It is really a very powerful toxin to the gut and therefore to the brain and really the rest of the body. So, sure, there's been a significant uptick in the gluten-free movement, in the sale of gluten-free foods.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just because people, you know, think that, well, a tennis player is gluten-free and he's doing really well, and I think I'll do it and see what happens. It's because they're getting results. It's because suddenly they're getting resolution of things like their long-standing headaches or their fatigue or their brain fog or their joint pain or their skin disorders. So gluten leads to inflammation in humans, and that's the real traction point in terms of why it's becoming so popular.
We talk about gluten and inflammation. You also talk about, you know, treatments for things like ADHD, headaches. I think there's a real interesting correlation there, and it has a lot to do with the sugar and the carbohydrates. This all comes together. But, you know, when we look at the prescription rates for some of these conditions that we're seeing, you know, the headaches, the ADHD, and the fact that, you know, we're prescribing drugs, the statins, and when the solution could probably be maybe sourced right back to the diets that we're eating on a daily basis.
You're right. The unfortunate thing is that's just a level of interaction, doctor-patient interaction, that doesn't happen. You want to go to your doctor because you have something else to do. You want to go to your doctor. You want to be in and out in 15 minutes with a prescription in hand to fix the problem, and that's it, done. I'm finished, and I don't need to hear any more. I mean, what needs to happen is you need to spend some time and speak with a knowledgeable person about the food that you eat, believe it or not, because the drugs are treating the smoke, and you want to pay attention to the fire. And none of the drugs that you might take for any situation are paying any attention to the actual disease process. They're only focused on symptoms.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned in your book, Dr. Perlmutter, about the medical community. You know, I bless the doctors. There is so much knowledge out there and so much that they need to know. They can't possibly know it all. So when you talk about, you know, getting to somebody who is in the know, that's not always necessarily your doctor. And no blame going on here. Trust me on that. But there's just so much new information that you really do have to go source it out.
I would agree with that, and I would, in terms of blame, I would say that, truthfully, I would blame medical education.
Right.
Medical education is just geared to churning out doctors who, you know, can just basically very quickly write a prescription and then be done with it.
Interesting stuff. We're talking with Dr. David Perlmutter. You can check out his great information at drperlmutter.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at David Perlmutter. Well, you know, we talk about solutions. Two things I'd like to just sort of wrap this conversation up with Dr. Perlmutter is the influence of exercise and the type of exercise that's really going to impact your health. This is an interesting conversation. I think everybody understands that exercise is important, but the type of exercise can be as important as actually just getting out there and doing something.
No doubt about that. And, you know, we all think exercise is a good thing to do and makes you feel good, helps your mood, and maybe good for your heart. And if it's weight-bearing, now it's good for your bones. But the new story, which is coming out of the University of Pittsburgh, is that exercise is dramatically helpful for your brain. That when we aerobically exercise, we actually change the gene expression that turns on the genes that help our brains grow new brain cells and stave off Alzheimer's. So, you know, pretty exciting work by a Dr. Kirk Erickson, published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. And who knew? So it's aerobic is what we need. And, you know, just to mention another study that was published last week in the journal Microbiome, a study that demonstrated that aerobic exercise is associated with more diversity of the gut bacteria. We lose diversity in things like obesity and diabetes and other inflammatory disorders. We need to have different gut bacteria, a big diverse range. And that's just another new light in terms of what's going on to increase gut diversity, and that is aerobic exercise. I'm all in favor of stretching. I'm all in favor of weight training. Do those myself. But the aerobics are the most important thing for us to be doing now in order to maintain a healthy brain.
Yep. And we know, Dr. Perlmutter, in our priorities for human performance, our number one consideration is rest and recovery. And inside of that group is sleep, of course. On your blog at drperlmutter.com, you have a fantastic write-up about the top 10 priorities for restful sleep. And I think sometimes people get away from the importance of sleep and overall health.
True, and certainly as it relates to the brain. So I would say that you know, it's really underrated. Sleep issues are becoming much more prevalent in our very hectic modern society. We really need to understand that, you know, there comes a time in the evening when we need to shut everything down and get what is called restorative sleep. There is a strong correlation, very strong correlation between interrupted sleep and risk for Alzheimer's disease. For example, we know that there's a dramatic increased risk of about 60% of becoming an Alzheimer's patient if you have sleep apnea, meaning that you stop breathing at night, which is really related to obesity. And we see a lot of sleep apnea these days. So, You know, I think it's really important for people to embrace this notion that sleep is playing such an important role in brain health. Who knew?
Who knew? Dr. Perlmutter, thank you so much for your time today. The book is The Grain Brain, The Surprising Truth About Wheat, Carbs, and Sugar, Your Brain Silent Killers. You can also look at The Brain Maker. And coming in November, The Grain Brain, The Whole Life Plan. You can pre-order that right now. Dr. Perlmutter, thank you so much for your time and your research. Appreciate
Jeff, thanks for having me. I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, no, our pleasure. And we'll look forward to talking to you in the near future. There you go. Hey, we got to cut out for a quick break. We are way off the clock right now. But when we come back, we'll wrap up this episode of War on Sugar with Dr. Perlmutter. And we'll look at the Crush Fall lineup. So stay tuned.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Okay, welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Kershaw here. It is our monthly episode dedicated to our war on sugar. Great, great conversation there with Dr. David Perlmutter. Neurologist, fellow of the American College of Nutrition, a very unique combination of expertise, and it served him quite well. He's got some great books, and if you listen to that conversation, you know what I'm talking about. That is one of the no BS versions of nutrition gospel when it comes to the war on sugar and overall health. The spin here was the focus on brain health. You know, we've been so enamored with the implications of obesity, and rightfully so. It's very, very important that we address that in terms of our diet and exercise programs, and also the, I guess, impact diabetes is having on our population and potentially moving forward on our healthcare system. But I think we've sort of overlooked the implications of what we do on a daily basis and our brain health. Now, this is a long game, to be certain. This is something we need to look forward to, but because we don't see our brains like our waistlines, our genes don't fit. You know, our brains are suffering right now because of what we're eating and probably because of our lack of exercise in general. A couple of interesting things that came out of that conversation, I thought, was right off the start when we talked about where did it all go wrong? Like, why are we where we're at today? And the government's push to limit the amount of fats in our diet and increase the amount of carbohydrates back in 1992, I'm telling you right now, that is a TSN turning point if there ever was one. And if you want to go back and listen to that part of the conversation, it's quite obvious. And if you look into Dr. Perlmutter's book, Grain Brain, it's in there. He has a great graph that looks at the overall incidence of diabetes, and it goes back to 1992, when in the U.S., Canada follows suit here. Canada is right behind, if not maybe even in front of the U.S. in terms of the trends that we're seeing in diabetes, obesity, and Alzheimer's. But in the U.S., the data that he collected showed a direct correlation between that massive shift in our daily diets and what happened to obesity and diabetes. Very scary. And on top of that, the impact now we know that this type of a diet is having, this high carbohydrate, low fat diet is having on our brain health, long-term brain health. So that's an interesting perspective, but also just a couple of interesting points that I think we just need to be aware of coming out of that conversation. Becoming diabetic doubles your risk of Alzheimer's. If that doesn't give you some motivation, I don't know what is. And the fact that type 2 diabetes is reversible and totally preventable, just like obesity and overweight, that's pretty encouraging. We have the ability to do this. And some of the new research that he referred to, like the NYU study that showed, you know, through just healthy life choices, exercise and diet on a daily basis, you can reduce your risk of Alzheimer's 50%. This is new data and new research. So I got to thank Dr. Perlmutter for that great conversation. The podcast will go up. Got to thank Conman for guiding us along on the show. And we got to thank you guys for listening. Listen, coming up in the next few weeks, it is fall. and fall sports on Crush Performance. Next week, we're talking head injuries and concussions as the hockey season kicks off, as well as the NFL season. So we're looking forward to that and much more Crush Performance coming your way all this fall. We'll talk to you then.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.